Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I am Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on this, rainy, dull, dreary Monday. It's usually great on Monday. Usually the sun is out, the birds are singing out there. Today it's a little on the duller side, and it might be rainy the next few days. So just cuddle up, however you want to cuddle. Yeah. Cuddle up, get ready. It's going to be an interesting show, very informative, very entertaining show for you today on this edition of the Arts Magazine Show. I saw a great show last Friday night at the Barn. The producers, they did a great job with that. It was a wonderful bang-up job. The show has closed as of yesterday, so or is there another weekend? Not sure. Well, I'll find out before the show ends today. But it's a great show over there. They did a great job. It's a musical, and what a great premise! You know, producers collecting, selling 400% of a show. Highly illegal, but entertaining nonetheless. So that was my entertainment for Friday night, of course. Welcome to the show. We're going to talk about some interesting... we always talk to interesting people, and we talk about things that they're interested in, which makes it all the better. We're going to feature a show called One Touch of Nature, The Four Seasons, and with us to tell us all about it from the Bach Aria Solist, the artistic director and violinist, Elizabeth Saw Lane. Yes, she is with us today. And Elizabeth Williams Bickers, harpsichordist, is with us today. Thanks for coming.
Thanks
for coming and telling us all about kind of a joint concert between you, Bach Aria Soloist, and the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival, kind of a combination of music and Shakespeare poetry.
That's right.
Sounds like it would be a very romantic thing for a young couple to get out and do.
Absolutely, and families who like Shakespeare and great music.
It's going to be Saturday, November 21st, 7:30 p.m. at the Kansas City Center Library, 14 West 10th Street. If you MapQuest things, if you're not familiar with downtown, you need to be. But the zip code is 64105, and that's coming up on this Saturday evening at 7:30.
I guess
there's been a lot of demand, I guess, for ticketing for this thing. Although it's it's not a high priced thing at all.
No, it's our gift to the community from us and the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival, also the Kansas City Public Library. They're huge in this, and the Kemper Foundations are underwriting it so that it can be free. And this is our third collaboration with those two organizations, Heart of America Shakespeare and Kansas City Public Library. So we're really thrilled to bring this program. This is a different program. Every time it's a different program. And this one we're focusing on nature and Vivaldi's Four Seasons and nature in Shakespeare.
So. Nature changes. There are at least four seasons. Some people would argue there are more than that.
Right.
But each season has a different feel to it.
Completely different. Like right now, it's finally starting to feel like autumn, whereas it was summer forever and ever.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it really is. I mean, and that's a good thing. I would hate for the weather to be exactly the same all the time.
Oh, me too. Although, I have to say, I do like that California sunshine.
Are you from there?
Like the sunshine better,
yes,
too.
That's right.
Are you from there?
I'm not from there, but my daughter lives there, and my brothers live there, so I go there a lot.
Oh, sure. What about Elisa. I'm going to phonetically write that right now. What about yourself?
I grew up in Maryland, where we have all four seasons. We have all four seasons here, too, but in different lengths of time.
Yeah, that's a lot like here in Maryland. I visited Maryland. It seemed to be a lot like here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you have this concert program.
Yes, we have a great program. Would you like to hear more about what the scenes are and what I already told you that we're doing with all these four seasons, which we're really thrilled about.
And you have the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival, reading the poetry while you play the music.
Well, actually what we're going to do, because we're doing these really loud and very dramatic movements from the Vivaldi, it's going to be way too loud if we did it that way. So instead we'll juxtapose. So we'll do the first movements from each of the seasons, except for spring, which we're in which we'll do the last movement. And then the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival will be doing scenes from A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Wow.
From Macbeth, Twelfth Night, and Othello. So they'll get a huge, hearty portion
and
of...
Hamlet, too. Isn't Hamlet in there somewhere?
Hamlet, yeah, a little bit of Hamlet. Yes, you're right. They'll get a huge portion of great Shakespeare, famous Shakespeare scenes. And then the most glorious Vivaldi music, I don't know what could be better than that.
Yeah, this is a presentation that you came up with on your own. I mean, I assume they picked the pieces they wanted to read, and you picked the musical pieces.
Yes, I picked the music, but they picked the Sydney Garrett.
Sydney Garrett,
their artistic director, picked the scenes. And as I said, this is our third partnership. So what we do is, oftentimes we select the music first, and then kind of based on the emotion of that music, then she will choose the appropriate scenes. If we want it to be a light or comic moment, or if we want it to be a high drama, or if in this case with the seasons, if it's a wintry scene or a summery scene, for example, A Midsummer Night's Dream, there's some perfect elements in there that she is bringing to this concert. And our audiences seem to really love it. I mean, it's always...
Yeah, they're always a lot of fun. You know, we get good reactions from the audience because we present a great variety. Even within Vivaldi's Four Seasons, you know, that's one composer, but still within what he's written, there's so much personality. Like, within one movement, you'll go from acting a little bit drunk to acting a little bit happy to being tired. I mean, so the pieces on their own tell a story, and then you go into a literal story. So it's a really neat juxtaposition, and we always have a very good time.
Yeah. Do you love the music that goes along with it? You play the harpsichord.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's different because Vivaldi's Four Seasons were written for fuller string instrumentation and continuo, and, you know, we are going to remake it ourselves for violin and harpsichord and guitar, so it's going to be a different experience than anybody's ever had of this music, but very appropriate.
Right.
Well, sounds a very nice evening's performance.
Yeah.
Very, like I said, it sounds very romantic in nature for someone who wanted to see that.
I think Kansas City likes this kind of programming because it's always this partnership is always at capacity. So although there are technically not any seats available, it always happens that some people aren't going to show up. And so if we would invite brave souls to
still come,
venture down.
So is there a waiting list?
There is a waiting list, and you can contact Bach Aria Soloists at gmail.com. If you're dying to come and want to be on the waiting list, then we would be happy to have you there.
Yeah, we're speaking with Elizabeth Saw-Lane, the artistic director and violinist, and Alicia Williams-Bickers. She plays the harpsichord. They'll be performing along with Bo Bledsoe.
Actually, this time we have a guest guitarist, Douglas Neat. Bo Bledsoe is our guitarist, but he is otherwise occupied.
So Douglas
Neat, whom we love, who has worked with us many times.
We may or may not be competing against Bo on this particular night.
Is there two events going on the same night? We won't talk about that.
We will not talk about that.
We'll never speak about that.
But we're so happy to have Douglas Neat, who will be joining. He's a marvelous guitarist.
And he's played with us before in Agile and funny and be great.
Yeah. One of the things I've noticed that you've done is you collaborate with a lot of different kinds of groups.
People.
I remember you came here once. You had a collaboration with Jennifer Owen.
That's right. Uh-huh. We do. I mean, that's one of our mantras, I would say. We've been doing it forever.
Mm-hmm.
We have had very successful concerts with jazz, with Bobby Watson, with, as you said, Jennifer and the Owen Cox Dance Group, with Williams Henry Contemporary Dance, with Parsons Dance even, and we brought the great world scholar of Bach, Dr. Christoph Wolff, to Kansas City for his very first time to do a joint program with us down at the library. Again, we love working at the Kansas City Public Library and Crosby Kemper. And we've worked with these actors from the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival, as we said, for three different programs now. And, we do a lot. We'd like to partner with other great arts organization.
See, I think that's a great idea because people get exposed to you. They get exposed to these other groups and organizations at the same time. And
exactly.
It helps both of you, I would think.
It certainly does, and it's more interesting for the audience.
Classical music can be so much more successful if it doesn't exist in a vacuum, mm-hmm. you know, to do things with other people, other kinds of arts. Very liberating. You can find all kinds of new ways, new opportunities to make art.
Yeah, and you know, there are some people that kind of think of classical music as rather stuffy.
Yeah.
It's not.
Not at all.
That they think of it that way, but doing things like this kind of breaks that barrier.
And it opens it to a new audience, because if you do a collaboration with live dancers, you bring a dance audience to hear instrumental music, and you also bring an instrumental music audience, and they see dancers, and they come to appreciate each other's kinds of art.
I remember being exposed to classical music even as far back as grade school.
Oh,
our grade school teacher played pieces from her personal, they were records in those days. She played pieces, and then we would go see the Kansas City Philharmonic playing some of those same pieces.
Great.
And I remember how soothing it was, you know. as you listen to, for instance, Grand Canyon Suite comes to mind. And I remember you could just imagine yourself floating down the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon. And years later, when I visited the Grand Canyon, all that came back to me.
Right.
Music does that.
It stays with you. It stays with you forever. And it's you know, they've proven that it's with you from birth. What comes first, music or language?
It's very soothing as well. A psychologist once told me that if you have unruly children, and I'm sorry if you do, playing classical music calms them down.
It certainly does. Calms my dog down.
I think that they would cross, not comparing children and dogs.
I just played piano with a dog this morning, and he laid down right next to me, and
very, very soothing.
But you know, as you're talking about programmatic music like Grand Canyon Suite, these four seasons are such fantastic programmatic
pieces. They're meant to
be a
picture.
And Vivaldi himself wrote these sonnets to go along with them. You know, I don't know if you knew that, but a lot of people do know that, but most musicians know about it, but a lot of other people don't. But anyway, so each season he's painting a very specific scene in each one of the movements of his, and he actually writes out the sonnets in the score, so you can see when you're playing, you know, these crazy across the string 16th notes, that's supposed to be the icy storm or the borealis winds. And, you know, it's really fun to know about it, and it's really fun to play.
Mm-hmm. I'll bet so. Well, let's tell us a little bit about the program, what you're playing and what actor is reading what poetry or what piece from and
okay,
all that.
Sure.
And just give the folks an idea of what they'll hear.
We go through all the seasons, starting with autumn. That's one of my very favorite ones. And, you know, that one's about the peasant and the village dancers.
And that goes into a scene from Midsummer Night's Dream.
Exactly. And then we do a winter, first movement of winter, which is all about shivering ice, frozen amid frosty snows, howling winds.
And then that's where we get into the Macbeth and Twelfth Night and Othello scenes, which match so nicely the music that we would have started with.
That's right. And then we go to La Primavera, or spring. And it's really, this is the last movement that we're going to be doing, and it is very clearly a dance, and it's celebrating the festive sounds with bagpipes, nymphs, shepherds dancing about the brilliant canopy of spring. That's coming from Vivaldi.
And so then that's another scene from Midsummer Night's Dream, the funnier one, I think.
The funnier one
is during spring, and then Hamlet.
And then we finally end with a movement from summer, which is also extremely high drama. And, you know, that's... He writes this beautiful. Shall I tell you what?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, it's in Italian, it's much more beautiful, but unfortunately, I can't speak Italian. But he says, "Beneath the blazing sun's relentless heat, men and flocks are sweltering, pines are scorched. We hear the cuckoo's voice, then sweet songs of the turtle dove and finch are heard. Soft breezes stir the air. But threatening north wind sweeps them suddenly aside. The shepherd trembles, fearful of violent storm and what may lie ahead.
It's very dramatic.
Yeah. Well, we're all fearful of what may lie ahead. You just don't know.
That's right. And Lisa, you want to tell what the actors
are? Here we are.
Yeah.
So we'll have Brie Elrod and Carla Nowak as our ladies, and Teddy Trice and Jake Walker. And we've not worked with Teddy and Jake before.
We've never worked with Teddy and Jake.
We're excited to meet them and have a good time with them.
Yes.
Yeah. Will they be appearing in the Summer Shakespeare Festival?
That's a good question. I can't answer that.
That's all right.
That, but Carla Nowak we've worked with many times on all three of these programs.
Yes.
And she's even gone into the schools with us to do our Bach Reach education.
She does a great job.
She does.
We've had her here on the show.
Oh.
Very good job at reading and doing Shakespeare. If you do Shakespeare, you have to have a special flair.
Oh, no sure. Kidding. No question about it.
You have to have a lot of fun with it, but serious as well. Shakespeare can be very hard to do. I've heard different directors say different things. Some mm-hmm. say it's the hardest thing you can do. And other directors say it's the most difficult thing to do, but it's also the easiest thing to learn because of the rhyme and pentameter. People say, oh, all those lines, how could I say? No, it flows pretty well once you get into it.
Right, and you know, we went to some schools recently. We've done this for over many, many years now, where we had several actors join us, and you know how every high school, the kids have to read Shakespeare, and sometimes in middle school as well. So the thing is, we do make, as you say, we make it really fun, and we break down the scene. We have the kids do some of it. We like the last time we were in a school, we had the kids doing the curtsying and bowing that they would do, you know, back in the time while Bo and I were playing Renaissance music to you know, accompany it. But then you know, oftentimes there's, you know, the communication without words. So we were showing them that first, and then we had them learn some of the trickier lines that are a lot of fun.
Yeah. Do you remember doing Shakespeare in school?
I did not understand it.
It was really hard.
And, you know, my husband has taught English.
Right.
And I mean, he gets it, and he knows how to talk about it, but whenever he's talking about his lesson plans, I just remember reading this old English and having no idea what was going on. I just couldn't. Uh-huh. I mean, I get it now, but it was hard in high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, it tells you a lot about those times, the eras that they lived in.
Right.
It's an exaggeration, of course, as that kind of writing would be.
Right.
But and there's writing about what's happening politically and religiously.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
And if you're not familiar with those things, you have no idea what they're referencing. And so that was hard for me.
Well, you know, there's comedies, dramas, you know, period historical pieces.
Right.
But in a lot of the comedies, of course, he's making fun of the upper class.
Of course. Right?
And he's doing that for the benefit of the lower class.
Of course. That's right, Michael.
Some scholars will say that he was actually commissioned by the upper class to write about them. So I often wonder, did they really realize what they were getting into?
Well, probably not. But the other thing that you just reminded me of that, you know, in all of Shakespeare's plays and just in the time, the combination of music and word together. I mean, back then they would have had plenty of music during the presentation of the play, and so I think sometimes now we forget that because, you know, maybe sometimes when people are presenting the Shakespeare, they don't add in the music, whereas, you know, we're kind of reminding people that there is so much music, not only in the scenes, but also setting up every scene, there would have been music.
Well, yeah, in a show like Midsummer Night's Dream, for instance, I would expect that a lot of playing of background music and things like that would have been going on in the time.
And they sing, you know, there are a lot of songs in Shakespeare's plays, too, so
I'm not sure exactly which scene it is from Hamlet that they're doing, but I'm really looking forward to that one in particular this year because this summer I went to Denmark and I went to Hamlet's castle, Elsinore, that inspired part of that from the Danish king. And so I look forward to, you know, being on stage with Hamlet going on and trying to picture it set in that castle.
You don't need to look at the sheet music, I guess, when you reach your level. Can you picture things like that as you're playing, and does that help?
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, almost all the time when I'm playing music, I don't only want to be in the black and white of the notes. You know, you want to be putting yourself on a different plane, putting yourself in the middle of a story or a memory or a desire.
And, of course, in this case, when Vivaldi is very specific about what he wants the music to be depicting, then we really want to bring that.
Right.
We really have to communicate that.
Yeah. It sounds very exciting. This will be happening on Saturday, November the 21st at 7:30 p.m. at the Kansas City Central Library. That's the one downtown, 14 West 10th Street. If you MapQuest things, you need the zip code 64105, or you can go online to BachAriaSoloist.com and learn all about it. Get on the waiting list, perhaps.
That's right.
And who knows? Sometimes people can't come, and that might be your opportunity.
It's a big library. We got
space. It is.
Do they take you upstairs to that room up there?
No, we do it right in the foyer.
Really?
The beautiful foyer.
Oh, wow.
So in the grandiosity of that building.
Does the stone of a building like that help with the music?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a huge factor. Uh-huh. Every bit of material that's in there makes a difference. So the wonderful thing is that Crosby Kemper is extremely welcoming to the Bach-Aria Soloists and to our music and this kind of exciting programming. So even though it's not, I mean, we enjoy so much playing there. It's not a concert hall, so it's not going to be perfect. But we kind of don't care about the fact that it's, you know, not perfect acoustic.
And it's wonderful philosophically to do literature and poetry in a library.
Exactly.
I mean, it just makes sense to kind of put yourself into that academic area that's got also some nice acoustics and grand columns and
I'll
feels
bet.
Right.
I'll bet. Well, I don't want time to get away from it. I want to ask you about the events you have coming up for BachAria.
Yes. Well, Elisa and I can tell you about them. We have a holiday house concert that is sold out. It's a great problem to have in December. But we have two more concerts, community concert events, on February 6th. We're doing the
My birthday. Get excited.
What?
Oh, and Ronald Reagan's birthday.
Yay. We're celebrating Elisa's.
I will ask you how old.
No.
I know better than that.
18 and 19.
Okay, good answer.
We'll be celebrating Elisa's birthday with the community in our Adventures of Don Quixote concert.
Oh, wow. Another romantic thing.
Yes.
It's the 400th anniversary of the book, isn't it?
That's right. And we're bringing in Mark Robbins, another fantastic actor.
Oh, he is.
Isn't he great? To help us with the different scenes and the characters from the greatest novel ever written, so-called. And then we'll bring you music, Spanish music, and music from Telemann's suite that was specifically inspired by Don Quixote. And so combining the, you know, this great
literary
piece, yes, with the great music of the time. And then on May 6th, we are playing in a new concert space.
Brand spanking new.
At the Carbank. You know that beautiful Carbank building?
Oh, sure.
On John Anderson Parkway?
Uh-huh.
Yes, so Steve Carbank put a hall in there.
Wow.
I know. Nobody knows about it yet.
They will soon.
Well, they do now.
He does not build bad buildings.
That's right. And so for both of these events, there are plenty of seats available, and tickets can be purchased online through the BachAriaSoloist.com.
Sure. Yeah, you have pretty much a year-round schedule now. You must give yourself a break once in a while.
Well, you know, this summer, not really. This summer we're going to go to Thailand to play on the Thai
International Composition Festival. Yes, I know. We're so thrilled. We just found out today, in fact, that we received one of our grants for which we applied for this festival in order to go. But we were invited by the International Composition Festival to do the Asian premiere of this piece called Dialogue by Narong Prongcharen.
And we commissioned that for last year's season, which is our 15th season. So that was kind of our anniversary gift to ourselves, was to commission this new piece from this wonderful young composer who then got us an invitation to go play in Thailand.
Yeah.
Well, music really is the universal language.
It is. I know.
Yeah, people can get confused about different languages, but music, everyone seems to understand if they get the feel of the music, what it's about.
That's right.
It's an amazing piece also.
It is. Just I hope one day we can come and play it here.
Well, I know it's difficult in a room like this, but I welcome that whenever you can arrange that. That would be great.
Yes, I really would like as many people as possible to hear Narong Prongcharen's music, his new compositions. And he's world-renowned now, but still people in Kansas City don't know about him too much.
Sure. If people want to know about your events, you do a lot of house concerts.
We do.
That's probably very rewarding for you. It gives you such an intimate feel.
Yes, we love it. We love it, and the audience loves it. And we have such a, you know, generous benefactors to host in their own home, and that's the way it used to be.
Yes.
You know, chamber music. That's the definition of chamber music.
Yeah.
So we're bringing it back to the roots.
It's great that you're doing that. I think that's wonderful. Is it best to contact you at bacariasoloist.com?
Yes, and if you want a direct email, would be bacariasoloist@gmail.com. But yes, bacariasoloist.com is our website. You can find out all the information.
All the information about upcoming concerts and past concerts. And
yeah, and actually see what you look like. People tell me all the time, I want to know what your guests look like.
Well, I'm stunning. And this lady over here, I mean, I just can't, there's no words. Describe her beauty.
You're both lovely. Me, not so much.
Oh, yes, he is, Michael.
Oh, thank you. Talking about the, mostly for the most part, but check out their future concerts as well. It's going to be a tough ticket, but this Saturday night, November 21st at 7:30 p.m. at the Kansas City Central Library, 14 West 10th Street, the library that's downtown, One Touch of Nature, The Four Seasons, a Bach aria soloist in conjunction with the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival, an evening of poetry read by the actors, music playing by Bach aria soloists. It sounds very, very beautiful. Can you imagine a combination of a dinner downtown and concert?
Oh, that's right. I know. That would be the best date ever.
Yeah.
And walking into the Kansas City Central Library, if you haven't been there, you have to go.
Oh, yeah. It's a great place. The libraries in Kansas City are all very, very well.
Fantastic.
They really are. I want to thank my guests for being with us, Elizabeth Saw Lane, the artistic director, founder, and violinist. If we had more time, I'd ask you about the other places and things you've played for.
Oh.
I'm sure there's and Elisa Williams Bickers, harpsichordist. I'm having a hard time. It's the change of season.
That's what I'm
playing with. Harpsichordist and Douglas Neat will be playing the guitar as well for One Touch of Nature, The Four Seasons, kind of a combination. I love collaborations. I think that's the best thing anybody can do.
That's
between
right.
Bach aria soloist and the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival. Get a little feel of Shakespeare poetry and music to go along with it and accompany.
In the seasons.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Telling us all about it. We love to hear about things like this going on. We're going to take a break. When we return, we're going to talk about some of the goings-on over at the J. That's the White Theater. They call it the J now. They're doing Little Shop of Horrors, where the plant is the star. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
That's what we need to do. Little Shop of Horrors.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. It's been a great show so far, and I'm sure that's going to continue. We're going to journey on over to the White Theater, also known as the Jewish Community Center, now known as the J.
Now known as the J, yes.
And with us to tell us all about their production, Little Shop of Horrors, currently just eating up the audience.
Eating up the audience.
Pun intended?
Chewing the scenery.
Going on at the White Theater. We have three big performances left. At least that's what I have on my calendar. I'm sure they've had a great run so far. We'll find out. Wednesday, the 18th at 7:30 p.m. Saturday, the 21st at 7:30 p.m. And Sunday, the 22nd. A matinee at 2 o'clock p.m.?
It's actually Thursday the 19th at 7:30.
Thursday the 19th?
Yeah. So you get an extra day to buy tickets.
So it's the 18th and the 19th?
No, not the 18th, just the 19th. 19th, yes. 21st, 22nd.
I know there's no Friday performances at the Jewish Community Center because that is the Sabbath.
That it is.
Correct. So just bear that in mind as you make your weekend plans at the White Theater with us, of course, to tell us all about it. As I said, Jason Chanley, he is the production manager of the White Theater. did work earlier with Ed Alonso's Psychic Circus in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
It's on your bio.
Oh, yes. The bio. The ever-increasing bio.
Yes. Well, okay, that's good, though. Also done work at Worlds of Fun, mm-hmm. Starlight with EGADS and Eubank Productions. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that was a lot of fun.
Oh, very fun.
Those are energetic productions.
Energetic, funny, campy, which is right in line with Little Shop, which
right.
is why
sure.
Stephen mm-hmm. directed it. Yeah.
Also with musical theater heritage mm-hmm. and probably others as well.
I have been all over the place.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Kristen May Altoro plays the role of Chiffon. This is her debut at the White Theater, but she has performed in Theater in the Park at The Wiz. That was just this past summer.
It was, yeah.
Catch Me If You Can, was that the one at the Barn?
Yes, it was.
And uh-huh. Spring Awakenings as well.
Yep, at the Barn and at the Coterie, both of those.
And at the Coterie as mm-hmm. well. Anything else we need to know?
I don't think so.
I like long walks on the beach. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Pina coladas, hot tubbing anytime.
Well, yeah. That sounds great. But right now, she's doing Little Shop of Horrors over at the J. I jokingly said before, the plant is really the star of the show. Do the actors take umbrance at that?
You would know better than I. You're the one out there with it.
You know, I'm going to go ahead and say umbrance, don't really know what that means.
Do you take exception to that?
I do, yes. I have a lot of respect for Michael Gollier and DeMarcus Howell, who are the plant together. Michael is a puppeteer inside. I have a lot of respect for him. He's not even seeing the show, but he's definitely the star of it, and it takes a lot to just stay in that plant the entire time and puppeteer, and hopefully he's getting it all, and it just... The plant comes to life. It's absolutely beautiful. It's awesome.
It's very physically demanding, too.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's dripping sweat when he comes out of either of the different incarnations, and it's very, very difficult for him to do, and he does it marvelously, mm-hmm. very seamlessly.
People always ask, members of the audience are always asking, how long did it take them to make that plant and get it to open its mouth so wide that it actually swallows people whole, or appears to do so.
Well, with this one specifically, we rented it. They have several different plant packages that are out there because Little Shop is one of those shows that everyone enjoys and mm-hmm. likes to do, from high schools to community theaters. So there are multiple packages and multiple plants out there. So we actually just rented ours, and it comes with all the various incarnations, all the various sizes. And we got it in about 2 weeks before we went into tech. So we were working with it, figuring out kind of how it works, how we need to set up the scenes, how we need to block, how much weightlifting Michael needed to do to, you know, operate the thing and get into shape. And so it was quite a process. It's been a learning curve, and they've dealt with it marvelously and miraculously compared to the size.
It's incredible to watch.
Yeah. It's nifty.
Yeah, did you work for a while with an imaginary plant? Is that how that works?
Yeah, for a little while to develop a relationship between the plant. Because the plant is a character.
Sure.
So to develop a relationship between the other actors and the plant, we had the voice actor, DeMarcus. He sat on our set, and he was the one we talked to. So I think that was really a key factor for Drew, who plays Seymour, to get used to working with the plant as another character, to develop that relationship with him.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's like a character in the show.
It really is a very big one.
Started with a movie back in the, I'm going to say the 60s?
1960, Roger Corman, yeah. Started with a B movie, so it was the second showing of a double feature.
And it kind of lived like that for a while, and then other versions came out, a stage musical came
right.
out as well?
Uh-huh. They started with the stage adaptation, which was off Broadway, so, you know, in Jersey or whatever, comparatively. So that debuted in 82, and then that made its way to off-Broadway, and then it kind of stuck there for quite some time. It ran over 2,000 performances, which was quite the undertaking and quite the accomplishment of the day. And then in 87, the very famous Ellen Green, Rick Moranis, Steve Martin movie made its way onto the big screen. And then since then, it's just been a cult classic, and it's continued on, both in stage form and reruns and showings and all that good stuff. But just right now, it's been on the Logo Network, the movie itself. So it's been a nice little bit of research as we've been going through the process. So it's been kind of fun in that aspect to see that it's still alive and it's still going and it's still a very receptive show.
Now, have you seen previous versions of it, Kristen? Either of the movies or other stage productions?
I've not seen the original movie. I've, of course, seen the remake of it. I've been singing doo-wop and, like, R&B my entire life, so my dad was like, you have to watch this, especially since I love musical theater. So I've definitely seen the Ellen Green, Rick Moranis version.
Yeah, well, I guess it was Jack Nicholson in the original.
In the
one,
original,
back in the
yes. Yeah. Unknown at that time, comparatively to now. But, yeah, he was the kind of creepy, weird dentist patient who then was later played by Bill Murray in the remake in 87.
Oh, sure. A lot of famous people have wanted to do this. It's a lot of fun to do. It's an interesting story. They've added songs, of course, for the musical. What are some of the songs that you sing, Chris?
Of course, Skid Row, which is a classic. The title number, Little Shop of Horrors. And there's, I don't know, what other classic ones, everyone?
Well, I forget about the classic ones. She rocks out in You Never Know. There's a big, she just breaks out in the middle of the, you know, stage and rocks the stage. You have no idea. The first time we sang it in rehearsal, and she literally, to the music director, said, well, can I just go? Can I just do it? And we're all like, yes, yes, please. And then she just steps out, and this voice comes out of nowhere, and it was amazing. I'm like, okay, that's great. Can you do that again just for the rest of the night? And that's all we need to rehearse. I'm fine with that. So, I mean, that to me is iconic just in our show alone, is her breakout for that one number. And then just the rest of the backups and the vocals and the homages to doo-wop girls.
Yeah, there's a lot that channels a lot of the music from the time period, which is really awesome. The three doo-wop girls, played by myself, Rashidat Badajo and Jessica Alcorn, our character names are actually names of doo-wop groups from the 60s. So there were the Ronettes, the Chiffons, and the Crystals. Uh-huh. And we discovered that on research with our director, and it was pretty neat to hear all those little homages to the 60s and music of that time. So,
well, they wouldn't have as much fun with it as possible.
Yeah.
People say, well, the original movie was kind of a camp horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's gotten more camp over the years in the various versions. And this one is kind of a comedy, almost horror movie. I wouldn't say, I remember the last time I saw it, there were a lot of kids in the audience. I don't think any of them were a bit scared.
Well, because it's the thing. I thought the same thing. I was like, can kids come see this? And then just reading, it's just so ridiculous that it's hilarious and it's so great. And I think that kids would have a great time because you see this giant plant is eating people up. And it's just so bizarre that it's,
well, there's a reason for this.
Yeah.
As we will get into, do you want to attempt the storyline for those who have never seen it? Would you like to?
Gosh. I can certainly try.
Well, without giving anything away, of course, somehow they get a hold of this plant. And how does that occur?
It comes out from outer space.
Yeah. You know, a down and out florist on Skid Row, which is essentially the Bowery District of New York. A down and out florist who is not able to make ends meet decides to close the shop, but in a last ditch effort, his little employee Seymour says, "Hey, look, I found this new and exciting plant." And it just appeared by a plant seller that I generally go to, and it was odd and interesting, and here, we're going to put it in the front window, and sure enough, people will come in, and sure enough, people do. To that end, the shop then takes off, you know, the ground. They start getting more and more customers. They're getting recognized. They're flowering. Yeah, okay. Dumb
very
jokes.
Very punny today.
Thank you. I'm very punny today. So very goofy looking. To that end, the shop then, along with Seymour, become more prominent in the public eye. They're getting, you know, more and more noticed. Radio contracts, television contracts. Well, then we come to find out that the plant has a very specific diet that it needs. And Seymour then has to figure out how to go about feeding it so that it gets bigger and that he gets more of what he wants. And it's kind of a tragic story in a lot of ways. I'll say that without giving it away. But
a hilarious tragedy.
Yeah, and the good thing about the show too is that it is very tongue in cheek. It never takes itself seriously. There are so many cute little asides that happen, especially between Audrey and Seymour. Mm-hmm. But at the heart of it, it's still a love story. It's still boy meets girl. You know. Boy meets plant eats people, things like that, whatever.
Classic. It's classic.
Yeah. I mean, I put that up there with Shakespeare Festival and Greek Tragedy right there.
Right.
But it has all your elements of that sort of thing. Like, the doo-wop girls function as the Greek chorus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they're the three mm-hmm. girls that push the story along. They're the catalyst to the story, and they're the inner voice and the soliloquies of what's going on with the characters. And so it's really kind of cute in that way, too. There's a lot of substance, but there's also a lot of craziness and goofiness mm-hmm. going on mm-hmm. for 2 hours.
Well, some pundits have said we all have this desire within ourselves to have certain people, to see certain people get their comeuppance.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
And this is done in kind of an, I shouldn't say innocent way, but I can't think of a better word. A plant is doing it, not any people.
Right, very true. But it does go to speak to how far are you willing to go and what sacrifices are you willing to make to achieve what you want. In this case, Seymour wants the girl. Seymour wants notoriety.
That's right. Yeah.
And this is how he has to do it.
That's how he gets to it. Yeah.
And that's how this shop stays in business for a time.
For a time. Until
well,
everything
don't give too much away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at certain points, things tend to go awry, especially when there's missing people involved.
Yeah, you know, random clues, and then you start to put the clues together. What happens? Dum, dum, dum.
Yeah, what to do about this? Do they actually tell what's going on, those who know? And there are suspicions out there.
There are suspicions, and when confronted, you know, by it, like Seymour, is confronted by Mushnick, and then from there, the question is, okay, how do I deal with this? He's now figuring it out. He's putting the pieces together. Ooh, what do I do?
Without giving anything away, I think that it would really stop there, because that's, once Seymour starts getting questioned by Mushnick, then he's like, okay, now something has to be done, so that way these questions stop. I can either tell the truth, or we can proceed with the story.
Yeah, it'd be a really, really short show if he just decided.
If he was like, done. All right, here's what I do. The end.
The end. I'm honest.
There's always complications in the story.
There always are.
We're speaking with Jason Shanley, production manager, and Kristen May Altoro, who plays the role of Chiffon, which is a... And as you spoke earlier, I was going to comment, I wrote a little note, there actually was a doo-wop group called the Chiffons back then.
Yeah.
Did you play Chiffons music to get into the character?
I heard a little bit of it. I do like that music, so it was pretty neat to listen to it. They weren't huge, but they were pretty notable for.
Doo-wop music takes a particular timing. Have you ever sung anything like this before on a stage?
Oh, on a stage, no. Just at home.
Just at home. Was it easy for the three of you to get together for this? Because you have to work together.
Oh, yeah. Especially when it's a trio, there's a lot to focus on. With the how tight the harmonies are, it's really easy to slip into singing the same part as somebody else, or, you know, it's easy to fall out. But we stayed pretty tight, and we got really close even from callbacks. So it was pretty easy for us to just become a trio.
Yeah, if people don't know what you're talking about, you have to sing your particular part.
Yes.
At your particular pitch, if that's the correct term for it, and they have others. That's how doo-wop music works. And you can't suddenly go off and sing. You just concentrate and stay in your own head, and this is my part to sing, and this is what I have to kind of zone them out.
It's a lot of focus. It's a lot of focus, and you kind of have to clear your own space so you are making sure you're listening, but also not too hard where you're singing someone else, you know.
Okay, yeah. I imagine that would be difficult, too. Is the singing harder? Is it working with, perhaps dealing with the special effects? I'll call it special effects. Is that difficult?
Honestly, the hardest thing for me, or the hardest thing, was the choreography. I'm not a dancer. I've always said, I was like, I'm a singer first. So when it comes to dancing, I will always be in the zone trying to focus and counting out every step. So our choreographer, Tiffany Powell, did an amazing job teaching every single person and making sure that everybody had what they needed in order to make things easy for them and to do everything really well. So
did you look at some old 50s music, or movies perhaps with music?
Movies, no. Music videos for sure. Yeah.
to see how people moved back then.
Oh, sure. And then how's it different than today? There's people out there saying, oh, you mean they dance differently?
Well, it's a lot cleaner.
It's a lot cleaner.
Yeah, it's true. It's a lot more, I would say, just in the research that we had done, the difference between then and now is that now it's like pop and lock and hip-hop and very isolated and very, like, edgy and nifty and all that good stuff. Nifty's a word, right? I'm going to use it.
Yeah.
That sounds great, yeah. But to the end back then, it was very presentational. It was very standing. And what are you going to three do together in synchronized movement that is helping the song go along, but also at the same time not going to detract from the song that you're singing and what's going on around you. Especially TV back in the day was not necessarily as dynamic as it is now, with, you know, camera shots and dissolves and this, that, and the other, and chyrons and all that craziness that goes on with television. So that it really was park and bark in a lot of ways. So how do you then make it interesting while they're sitting there just doo-wopping and singing and make it lively and energetic? So that's kind of where we went.
Yeah, the J is a very modern, well-equipped theater.
That we are.
You should
that
be proud to work there.
I am very, very lucky. Very lucky to be running that space, hopefully, very well, I hope.
It's a very professional-looking space.
Mm-hmm.
You can fly in scenery. I know, on one of the early tours I had, they showed me how you could fly in scenery. I don't know how often you do that.
We do it pretty often. We do it in the show as well. And that's the one good thing, is that the J itself has a wonderful facility in the White Theater, which is, we're now in our 11th season, and with that amazing help of Scott Slobotsky, who is our arts patron chair, who raised a lot of the $13 million that was used to build the theater now 11 years ago and continues to be a great and wonderful supporter. Mm-hmm. But we're still an unknown gem in Johnson County, as we like to say. We're an unknown source of cultural arts, not only theater, but we have at the J a school for music and dance, the Encore School of the Arts. We have a Jewish film festival. We have visual arts classes and things like that. So there's so much that goes on at the J that is also a tribute to the wonderful facility we have of the theater. So it branches out, and it's great because there's so much dynamic cultural arts and things going on in and around the theater and the J itself.
I remember being in, well, it was a couple of shows there, but it was on Holmes, way back in those days.
Oh, yeah, 82nd, 83rd and Holmes.
Yes, that's about right.
Yeah.
I was in a couple of shows then.
Oh, wow.
And it was just gratifying to see you have such a nice space. And it's named the White Theater, so I assume the Whites.
Yeah, Lou and Shirley White. And Shirley White still comes to all of our shows. Unfortunately, Louis White passed away a few years ago before the theater actually opened. So the family is still very much involved. And I just saw Shirley. She came, I believe, last Sunday. And, you know, she still sees all the shows, still involved.
You have a full complement of events over there, not just theater, but musical events sometimes as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the good thing about our season and everything that's going on, is it's so very dynamic. We not only produce plays and musicals, but we also have, you know, lecture events with authors and music events and chamber groups. And it's such a dynamic season, and it's such a dynamic space to also bring in people and do community outreach and be a part of the cultural arts scene in Johnson County.
Yeah, the White Theater, the J, as it's called, the White Theater. It's hard for me to just say the
J. It's new. It's only been going on about 18 months now.
But the J stands for Jewish Community.
That
it's
does.
Called the J. The White Theater is located at 5801 West 115th Street. You can see the parking lot for the Sprint campus from there.
You can, yes. We are Sprint's very next door neighbor.
Right. It's in Overland Park, Kansas. If you MapQuest things, 66211 is what you need to do. The number to call for more information, 913-327-8054. And online, it's thejkc.org. And you can get information about the season, events they have, non-theater but musical events. You have a lot of that as well going on today. A full season, year-round.
A full season. You got everything from musical events to author lectures to book tours to puppets.
Yeah.
So,
meaning Jason's going to be very busy.
I'm very busy.
I call him Superman because he really is.
I don't get much time off, unfortunately. But it's a passion. It's a love. So I'm happy to do it.
Kristen has been with Musical Theater Heritage. Things of that. Oh, no. The Wiz, Catch Me As You Can, Spring Awakening. All musicals.
Yes.
Do any non-musicals?
Not since high school.
Not since high school.
Not since high school. I'm too scared to just act. That's a lot for me now.
Is the psychology of singing easier for you to do than just
singing? Oh, yeah. I've been singing with my sisters my entire life, so it's my second nature. I think I can sing before I could talk. So.
Is there an El Toro group of singing sisters out there?
There's five of us, and we all sing, and people are like, you guys should become like the next Jackson 5, but we're like, no, let's not.
You always have something to shoot for there, Chris.
And with a voice like she does, and that's a good thing, too, is all the voices.
Phenomenal.
In the show.
They're
just great, and... It's just fun to hear them sing and sit back and just go, oh.
Yeah, it's a huge honor to work with people that I've looked up to and that I've always wanted to work with before. It's just such a great honor to work with them every day.
I'll bet. Well, the name of the show is Little Shop of Horrors. Three more exciting performances. Thursday, the 19th of November at 7:30 p.m. Check your website, though. I think it did say 18th.
Oh, it did. Oh, goodness.
Saturday,
the 21st. Maybe.
An extra performance.
So you'll have to do a show.
There you go.
Saturday, the 21st at 7:30 p.m. Closing with a big matinee on Sunday, the 22nd at 2 o'clock p.m. at the White Theater, 5801 West 115th Street, Overland Park, Kansas. MapQuesting, you need the zip code 66211, the number to call. For more information, 913-327-8054 or online at thejkc.org. I want to thank you both for being with me.
Thank you.
Telling us all about the show where, don't be offended now, Kristen, where the plant is the big star.
I'll let it slide.
Jason Chandley, the production manager of the White Theater, also the scenic and lighting designer and facilities manager as well for the J, and Kristen May Altoro, who plays the role of Chiffon. Sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun for you.
It is, very.
Yeah, don't forget the other arts programming we have here on KKFI on Wednesdays. So we have Art Speak Radio with Maria Vasquez Boyd. Throughout some other shows, sometimes feature guests from the artistic community. And then we're on every Monday at noon here on the Arts Magazine show. If you want to follow the arts, if you want to get a taste of the arts, sometimes the things that are more offbeat rather than things you'll see going on at the big facilities downtown, you need to tune us in and find out some of the things that it's going on right here on KKFI. Dr. Mike will be sitting in for the Jazz Insider, and Dr. Mike is very laid back. Imagine, if you will, laying back in his chair, feet up on the board. That may well happen, Dr. Mike, as he plays jazz from 1 to 3. Then the blues will take over and take you from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.